This week, No Refund Theater presents
Frankie and Johnny in the Clair de Lune by Terrence McNally. Hello, we're here with Jason Cassidy, the director of Frankie and Johnny in the Clair de Lune. Could you tell us a bit what this play is about?
Okay, sure. This is a play written by Terrence McNally in the late 80s. It's about a waiter named Frankie and a cook named Johnny, I should
Waitress.
Say. Waitress, serving person, thank you, Rhiannon, who work at the same Greasy Spoon diner, go out on their first date, end up sleeping together. Well, they don't really do much sleeping, but they end up together in bed. And the show picks up, actually, as they're sort of finishing their initial encounter, and then it goes over the course of the night as these two kind of lonely, beat-up people try to figure out if it's worth starting a relationship so late in their lives after all this crap has happened to them. So.
And what, I guess, how did you first become introduced to the story? Did you just hear about it or look it up?
There was a movie that was made that was based on the show, on the show with Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer, and I saw the movie, and I remember thinking to myself, this would probably make a much better play. Like, it didn't really, it felt like it was a play that somebody tried to make a movie out of, and it turns out that's exactly what had happened. So then I actually was able to hunt down the original script, and this was probably maybe 10 years ago, and read it, and it was something that I wanted to do, but at the time I was only 18 or 19 years old. I didn't think I was mature enough to handle the subject matter as far as directing it was. So I kind of gave it a good 10 years. And
finally decided you won't
finally
ever reach
figured
that.
I'd give it a shot, yeah.
Gotcha. And I guess, how has it been directing two people in a very, serious, dramatic thing?
The nice thing is, it hasn't been that serious. I mean, the show has a lot of serious elements, but there's also a lot of playfulness to it. So it keeps from getting bogged down. It's been very different for me, though, just because I've been directing big casts for the past couple of years. Just, epic 30-people shows, and so to have the chance to be able to sit down with two people and just really work on character stuff and really find a lot of the subtext and the dialect and the subtext in the scenes and find those moments has been great. Like, I've really enjoyed it, but it can be just as exhausting as trying to rein in 20 people. Like, it's a different sort of direction, and it takes just as much energy, to really make sure that you're not shortchanging the audience or the actors on everything that they can glean from the show.
Okay. Well, what are audiences to glean from it?
I guess if there was a message or something that I want them to take away, and as corny as this may sound, you're never too old to fall in love is one. And you never can tell where the right person's going to come from. You can't afford to be picky, I guess, sometimes. Yeah. But hopefully when the audience walks out, they're gonna see two people who have decided, to give life another shot, and hopefully they'll be pulling for them. The ending is very ambiguous as to how things are actually gonna go between the two of them. So it's not all wrapped up nice and tight with a bow. So
okay.
And that's how life is. Life isn't wrapped up nicely either. There's ups and downs.
So it's a thoughtful play.
It is, yeah. I think there's a lot about, how everyone, how a person's experience in their lives really affect the sort of person they become. I mean, the two characters are in their 30s and 40s. So, they're older than the people who are going to be seeing the show. And they're older than the actors. So it's a different generation, and it's a different set of life experiences that the two characters are coming from that hopefully we'll be able to glean some common ground between the audience and those of us who are working on them.
Okay. And your show is going up when?
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday is the 22nd, and Friday is the 23rd, yes. And Saturday should be the 24th. And they're all at 8 p.m. here at 111.
Okay. All three?
All three.
Okay. All right. And then we're also joined by the two actors in this lovely play. If you could please pronounce your names, because I might mess them up.
Sure. I'm Rhiannon McClintock. I'm Pete Kadushin.
Okay. What has been the experience working on this? What's the most exciting, most challenging, most freeing thing about it?
Making out with Pete, all of them. I'm just kidding.
Second. I second that. Not making out with myself, making out with Pete. I guess Jason touched on it earlier. It's nice to be able to have a smaller cast. You can focus more on listening and interacting with the other person than sort of the stuff beneath the stuff beneath the other stuff that you don't normally get a chance to get to deal with, I guess.
It's nice playing someone who's kind of like myself, but also different, maybe potentially me in 10 years. Hope not.
You couldn't be a waitress. You'd drop everything.
Oh, you mean she'd be a bad waitress?
Oh, no. I meant she's too good to be a waitress. That's
okay.
Nice save.
Thanks.
Has it been hard, because you two had never met before being cast in this, correct?
Nope.
Developing that level of closeness, has that been easy or difficult?
I think...
The closest hasn't really started.
We haven't done it yet.
We haven't really gotten that close yet.
No, so far it's
fine. We'll let you know.
I haven't wanted to work on the physical stuff quite yet, because I want them to still be uncomfortable with each other, you know, when it actually... Because this is a couple, it's their first time together. So I don't want Pete and Rand to feel like it's old hat, you know,
right.
The physical, the intimacy.
Right.
Makes sense. He hadn't told us that yet, but
that
it makes
there
sense.
We go.
Yeah. I just thought he was scared to see what I looked like naked.
So you want them to feel awkward along with the audience as they're doing it?
I want everyone to feel awkward, basically.
Okay.
Preservation of the awkwardness to promote the actual feelings in that.
It's very method.
But as Frankie and Johnny get more comfortable with each other, the audience will get more comfortable as well. But there are awkward moments, and I want that to play for everyone. You know?
Okay. So this may not be the best first date choice activity, or would it?
I'd actually argue that it might be one of the best first date choices, because, I mean, there's sex, there's jokes, there's some drama, and above all, it's a love story. So in the end, I think, whoever you bring to the show is going to be pretty revved up, so. In a very emotional way, not physical in any sense.
Yeah, until the second act.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about my inadequacies. I have a few shortcomings, so let's not talk about them.
Jeff, favorite things about your character?
I like that she's kind of witty and sarcastic.
I like that in a character.
I like that in a character, because that's kind of like how I am, so that's nice.
I like that... The first time I read it, I felt like I could identify with the character, and then the more that I read it, the more complicated it became, and so it provided a really nice challenge, but there was that sort of gateway or connection emotionally that I felt for the character, so it made it easy in one sense and difficult in another.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Random question I just thought of. What does the title In the Clair de Lune refer to?
Clair de Lune means in the palace or the house of the moon. And it's kind of a twofold thing. It's straight off, there's a classical music station that plays throughout the course of the show. And it turns out neither of them really listen to classical music. It's just it happens to be on, and Frankie wants Johnny to think she's sophisticated, so they kind of leave it on. But at one point, Johnny calls the radio station and asks the DJ to play the most beautiful music in the world. And he plays Clair de Lune by Debussy. And that kind of becomes the song that runs throughout the course of the show. That becomes their song, in a sense. But there is a lot, because this takes place at night, and because the moonlight shining into the window is a constant, you know, it's always there. It's an atmospheric thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, Frankie's apartment also becomes the house of the moon. It's like, this is where they are, with the moonlight showing through the window. And the world's most beautiful music playing in the background.
Aww. Aww.
It's a good thing we have a smart director, because... I've just been like, yeah, the song's in the play.
So yeah. Have I been telling you guys this stuff?
Yeah.
No.
I'm supposed to listen.
It's a surprise. Okay.
So, has that been distracting at all? Because usually that you don't find that in a play, one piece of music is played throughout.
Tonight was the first
again,
night.
Again, yeah, this is
the
first time.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of really obscure music that is mentioned in the show, and it took me a while to hunt everything down. So we're because it's playing throughout, we have to kind of get used to the timing to make sure that what's playing is sort of matching the mood that's going on. So, you know, Frankie's not talking about this beautiful flowing piece of music, and meanwhile, you know, some waltz is going on in the background. You know, it doesn't really fit, you know, so the timing is going to be a bit of an issue. But.
Oh.
But did you think it was distracting while you were talking?
No.
No.
I think the audience will just barely on the edge of perception, you know, kind of pick up that that's what's going on. But hopefully it won't be too distracting for everyone out here. So.
Right. Nice. Do you have anything you'd like to ask each other? Since you know the play, you know what you've been doing.
If I'd known we were going to do this, I would have prepared some questions in advance.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. No, I don't have any questions.
I have a really important question. It's been keeping me up at night. You're going to laugh when you see me naked. That answers that question.
No.
No further questions, Your Honor.
So expand on that, actually. We hit on that point. Who's naked and for how long?
We're both naked.
Well, actually, I am a little bit modest. I think I might be covering up. I don't know. So.
Concessions were made, but Pete, you'll probably still be naked.
So, in case anybody listening to this podcast...
like, the girl will not be naked.
Didn't pick up on that. About 15 seconds ago, I was under the impression that we were both going to be naked, and now I've just been informed that that's not the truth.
Makes sense for the character, though.
Do whatever you want with that.
Frankie, the character, she would...
Let's not air our dirty laundry on the podcast. We'll fight about this later.
But for the record, okay, so one character, played by Pete, will be naked.
Yes.
But it's not the focus of the show.
I mean, it's... The nudity was something we went back and forth with a lot. And in the end, I finally decided it was just... It was... Yeah, it wasn't going to be the focus, but it was necessary for, you know, the way their characters were. And, I mean... The show starts off with them having sex. I mean, that's the first thing that happens. So, just from a purely... logistical standpoint, somebody's got to make it at some point.
If it'll get more people out, I will say that I'm going to be
okay,
naked.
Okay, Rhiannon's totally going to be naked now?
Yes. So come on out.
Yeah.
Well, the illusion will be there, right? Like.
Right,
yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's yeah. We're going to be as creative as we possibly can with props and such and things.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah, you'll get up and like cover. Yeah. I'll be like,
oh,
Austin Powers.
Those type of props.
Yeah.
I
no,
thought we were talking.
Up.
Oh, okay.
Things just get more and more uncomfortable on this podcast.
Anyway.
So just in case anybody listening wasn't clear, we're not talking about sex toys. We're talking about props to cover up the fact that we're naked.
Where did you get sex toys from that? I did not.
Never mind. Okay. Never mind. We're already past it. We're already past it.
I don't know what I'm thinking. Too late, too late. Not enough time to work that into the show.
Yeah.
Well, actually.
But yeah, either way, the nudity is not an important part of the show, other than the fact that because we were doing what we were doing, you kind of have to be naked.
Well, and it's another subtext thing, though, too. I mean, Frankie is very closed off and sort of builds herself a wall, so it would make sense for her to put her armor back on and then sense her clothes. Whereas Johnny is a lot more free with himself. Johnny has no problem, you know, parading his emotions out as much as he does his other attributes. So, not that Pete's going to be parading, but, you know, he's not shy about it. Yeah.
All the way down Curtain Road. All the way down Curtain Road. There's going to be a parade.
Of Pete.
That's just me.
Yeah.
In winter, okay.
And my hernia scar.
It's so big.
Robin Powell, I think that was for you.
Yeah.
And Sarah, you know what, later on.
That's what she said.
Anything else you would like to say about the show?
Come see it, because it's going to be really good.
Yeah. These two put a lot of work into things, and you know, Alex, who's sitting over there, is the AD. He's been a big help, and it's really been a very you know, intimate strip down show, and I think that's something nice that NRT usually doesn't get. Something very, very real.
I'm looking forward to it. So thank you.
Thank you.
See
thank you,
you.
So hey folks, we're back, and I'd just like to add an addendum in case you're not sure who this is Pete again. But anyway, this will definitely be, the reason you should come is this is going to be the best show you'll see all spring semester. And I mean that, so get your ass out here and see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no excuse not to, really.
Right.
So, okay.
Yeah.
We will see you there. Otherwise, you will hear about it in one way or another.
Peace.
Thanks for listening in to NRT's podcast. Stop by next week for
Frozen by Bryony Lavery, directed by Jesse Kramer. This will run January 30th and the 31st at 8 p.m. in 111 Forum. Thank you for listening in. This is Nicole Arias, and we'll see you this weekend for Frankie and Johnny in the Crowdaloon, which again will run Thursday through Saturday, January 22nd through the 24th at 8 p.m. in 111 Forum.
See you there. Take care. This is the first song I ever learned, actually. Frankie and Johnny were sweethearts. Lordy, how that good love. Born to be true to each other. Yeah, true as the sky above. He was a man. Wouldn't do no wrong. And Frankie and Johnny went walking. And Johnny had on a new suit. Yeah, Frankie spent $100 notes just to make a man look cute. He was a man.
Stopped for a bottle of beer. Said to the old Beltana man, yeah, my loving Johnny man be here. He was my man. Lord, but he's been doing me wrong, so wrong.
Johnny looked over the transom door, and there to her great surprise, hey, had a loving man, Johnny, making love and nearly blind. He was her man. And she threw out a little
cola.
And
one time, twice,
three times, she sent him right to the hardwood floor. Yeah, she shot her man.
Oh, but he'd been doing it wrong.
He said, roll me over so careful. Roll me over so slow. Roll me on to my left hand side. Because you're pulling up his toe. I was your man. But I've been doing you wrong.
Saloon, see what's the matter with her boy. She come down. Frankie looked up at her. Hear what she said. She said, oh, Mr. Johnson, oh, forgive me, please. But I killed your loving son, Johnny, when I'm down on my bending knees. I shot your man, could you be doing me wrong? She said, I forgive you, Frankie. She said, I forgive you. Doing it wrong.
Yeah. All right. Okay, all right, slow down. Yeah, slow down.